I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, everybody. It is the handsomest podcast duo on the Pick Six Network because no Will Brinson automatically makes whoever it's left over incredibly handsome. Me, Ryan Wilson, the Brady Quinn football show specialist. This is my first Brady Quinn football show fill-in. I'm like Brady Quinn last weekend, Debo, when he had to fill in for Gus Johnson, except no one's ever mentioned Gus and Will Brinson in the same sentence before. So I'm filling in for Brinson. Glad to talk to my guy, Brady Quinn, on the Brady Quinn football show. Brady, how are you doing, my man?
Ryan, I'm doing well. I appreciate you filling in for Will. You know, obviously stuff happens, you know, crap happens. So, you know, I'm glad that you're able to fill in and be able to take over on this joyous ride that we're about ready to get on.
For real, let me ask you, because I was at the Syracuse-Purdue game Saturday afternoon grinding.
What a game, by the way. Can we talk about that for a second?
You want to hear the sad part? So I usually go to a lot of the games where there are draft eligible guys involved, and there are a lot on Purdue and there are a couple on Syracuse. It was like 10-6 or 10-9 at the end of the third quarter. I said, I'm getting out of here. I want to get home. I left at the end of the third quarter. I got home. They had scored 48 points or whatever in the third quarter. So I went back and watched it, but yeah, an incredible game. I don't know how closely you've been watching Purdue and or Syracuse, but Charlie Jones, that dude is fun.
Well, it's an indictment on Iowa. I mean, let's be real. You know, he was in the transfer portal and he was looking at going to either Purdue or Notre Dame. And I heard those rumors. I was like, all right, awesome. Like, hopefully we'll come to ND. And then he finds his way to Purdue. You know, so obviously Jeff Brohm had a little better sell to him. But look, as advertised, I mean, he went there for the offense. He went there for more touches, more exposure. He's getting that now. I mean, and I think when you look at him on tape previously, I mean, he was the Big Ten special teams player of the year last year coming out of Iowa, but you're like watching their offense going, why isn't he getting more touches? Why isn't he getting some more jet sweeps or option routes or deep shots or something? And it's not like I was not capable. It's just, they don't do it that often.
Chris Assel would like a word.
No, he would agree with me right now. So, you know, I think when I was there for week one, their matchup versus Penn State.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you saw him that I went back and watched that game and I was like, okay, this guy has some things. And I you know, just preliminarily, it's like, okay, day three guy. I saw him in person. He's bigger than I thought. He's actually faster than I thought. Yep. And he has fantastic hands. He was getting open consistently against Garrett Williams, who's going to be probably a day two guy cornerback, really physical cornerback. He beat him a couple times on just go routes, and and he made fantastic catches at the end of it.
Joey Porter Jr., go back, watch the tape versus Penn State. You know, there was times when they kept throwing. They weren't scared to throw against Charlie Jones versus Joey Porter Jr. Joey Porter Jr. is going to be a good player at the next level. I mean, you talk about a guy who has a frame that's so long. I mean, exactly what every NFL team's looking for in a quarterback in Joey Porter's son, Joey Porter Jr. And you're going, all right, like this dude's getting open versus him. Like it's, you know, he's going to be able to play at the next level. There's no doubt about it. I think the thing that I came away with was he's a better route runner than I thought.
Yep.
You talked about the speed. The speed I kind of knew was there just from him as a returner and being able to watch him at Iowa. But it was more just the fact of the impact that he's had. I mean, they needed a number one wide receiver in the worst way. given David Bell moved on, then obviously they had a suspension too, and they got it, you know, so that obviously gave them a lot of hope. But anyway, tremendous finish down the stretch. I thought both quarterbacks played gutsy, played really well, you know, for both Purdue and Syracuse on the stretch there. But I don't really derailed on that, but it had a bit of, I mean, obviously maybe not as fun of a game for you because you left early, but it was a hard game to watch.
Yeah, it's a big deal for Syracuse in general. They're 3-0, which hasn't happened for since 2018, I believe.
Well, look at all the basketball schools, right? If we quote unquote basketball schools, Kentucky's 3-0.
Yeah.
Kansas is 3-0. Duke's 3-0.
Duke.
Syracuse is 3-0. Indiana's 3-0. Like, you can keep going on down the line. Like,
what year is this?
UNC 3-0?
I think so. Drake Mays. Apologizing for saying truce earlier from North Carolina.
He doesn't need to apologize about anything besides absolutely burying bodies on the field. I love that kid. I can't wait to see what he's going to be in the next couple of years because he's what, a redshirt freshman. I believe he'll be draft eligible after next year.
I'm not even sure because he wasn't on my radar until I heard his comments. And I grew up in North Carolina, and that's typically the talking point. Like, you go to NC State if you don't get into North Carolina. And I was texting with some of my buddies, and NC State, they went to NC State, and they were.
Or Will Brinson.
Yeah, well. There's a fun little fact about Will Brinson that I don't want to call him out, but I'll call him out. He went to NC State. His degree is from somewhere else. I don't know if you knew that little fun fact.
I actually think I heard that somewhere.
Probably me.
Yeah, some people go for like the victory lap, and then other people just go somewhere else to finish. You know? Just a different race to actually get across the finish line.
But that's just me calling out Brinson. But May's a redshirt freshman, according to Debo, so he's got a little time. But yeah. Oh, one quick question, then we'll move on. I don't know if they've scheduled the game yet in terms of what day it is. Are you coming to town for the Notre Dame Syracuse game, Brady?
No. I mean, either way, I'll still be working on the weekends. But
right.
Trust me, I'd love to. I mean, anytime I have a chance to get to see the Irish play, even though this year hasn't looked good, I look at it this way. I think like obviously week one was week one, tough battle. You know, tale of two halves. Just Ohio State, you know, was the better team, and they showed it in the second half. The Marshall one's a head scratcher. It really is.
Oh boy. And they got pushed around too.
Which is surprising. Although I think that's been the story of their season is their offensive line play has been surprising. I think they thought that was going to be more of a strength than it has been so far. And it's not to talk disparaging about those young men.
No, you know,
but the reality is they haven't been as dominant as I think everyone thought they were going to be. And that's created some issues. But look, they got the first win in, against Cal. They got a tough UNC team this week. So
let me ask you this. Did you see the end of the game? The last play?
Of course I did. And I'm sitting there watching it going, why is Brandon Joseph trying to catch that ball instead of just
– That's my question. How many times do you think they've said in the D-backs meeting room, just please knock the ball down? And in the moment, you're like, I'm going to get an interception.
No, you know, in that instance, it's like it just doesn't make any sense to try to do that. You know,
you get a pick. That's the only,
I guess. I mean, right. That pad, but unless you have a clean shot at it, there's no reason he should have tried to do that. I mean, that literally was almost the most disastrous things ever.
Oh my God. And the ball hung in the air for what felt like 10 seconds. Like
I think Sturdivant is whose chest, who was on the ground, it fell on and it just was sitting there and somehow rolled off.
It's impossible that he didn't catch the ball, by the way. Like it sort of set there and he just knocked it off.
If he wouldn't have moved, it would have been a catch because it just sat perfectly on top of him. And then he kind of like went to grab it and move, then it fell off. But if you were just sat there, like they might have considered it a catch after a few seconds.
All right. One last question about college football, and then we'll get on to the rundown that Debo has in front of us. I'm fulfilling Will Brinson's shoes perfectly, by the way, just tangent after tangent. What was your takeaway, if any, as a, you know, the face of Notre Dame, as far as I'm concerned, when the television, the camera showed OC Tommy Reese yelling into the phone, I believe it Drew Pine.
Yeah,
the quarterback, and according to the lip readers, excuse me, it was just basically do your job. People are counting on you. Do your freaking job. And he was talking on the phone like I talked to my 15-year-old when he's done something stupid. Like you're just like seeing red, and you have no patience left whatsoever.
I always say this when I see that sort of emotion from a coach and directed towards a player. To me, I always come from the background that like they care, and also that. Player knows that coach knows how to push his buttons and that in that instance was needed. And if you actually look at how well Drew Pine played after that standpoint, it was big. It was huge for them. You know, he responded. And so just from knowing Drew Pine, knowing Tommy Rees, that's that sort of relationship they have, because that's how Drew Pine is. Drew Pine's a more fiery, energetic player. When you go around the team or locker room, they love him. And he's more of that energetic guy. Like, I remember being on the field at Soldier Field last year when he came in for Jack Cohn, who got hurt, and you know, threw a couple of touchdown passes, and he was doing the Conor McGregor thing, doing the whole belt thing and all that. Like, that's him. Like, he's a player who plays with, you know, kind of that, those emotions and everything else. And look, I think sometimes people see that and they're like, oh my gosh, like, I can't believe, like, he's talking like that to a player and all that. That's the reality of football.
Right.
It's a serious sport.
I say all the time, they're not working at a bank.
No. And that's really, when you think about all the time that goes into this, you know, that's the kind of emotions that go into it. And so you got to sneak peek into the reality of football. And that's, to me, that's great. That's fine. Like, that show me that, you know, it wasn't like Tommy's giving up on the guy.
Right.
If he was giving up on a guy, they just sort of flat out benched him, or they would have gone away altogether, you know, but that he was directing that towards him because both that player and coach trust each other. And they understand that, like, he's going to coach you hard, and he's going to push you to be your best version of you. And you'd be hard pressed to think that Drew Pine wasn't a better player after that wake up call, which is, that's what I call that. Like, that's, to me, you can phrase it however you want, you know, do your effing job. But the reality is, it was just a wake-up call. And then from that point on, Drew Pine started playing some really good football.
Right. My takeaway from watching initially and not knowing Tommy Rees or Drew Pine, other than what I've seen on television for the last 2 weeks, is like, yeah, I'm okay with that. And when I said I had those conversations, I've had those conversations with my 15-year-old. I've been so angry because it's something relatively straightforward that I'm imagining that Drew Pine probably didn't do. And we live in a world, and, you know, Pete Prisco will tell you that he and I are on opposite ends of a certain spectrum, and he gives me a hard time about it. But you live in a world where you can't say certain things. Like, I have no issue whatsoever with laying into, like, I think sometimes people need to be a little tougher. I'll just say 100%. That.
100%. I agree with you. And I think that's the thing about football too. And it's hard for people who probably judge that what they saw on social media, who aren't a part of the football world. Football is not for everyone. I'll say it right now. If you haven't played,
it ain't for me.
Well, again, that's okay. Like, people can be a fan of it, and I think they can appreciate it, but to be in the middle of it and understand, like, the pain that you go through, like, the pain to make your body what it needs to be in order to take the punishment of the physicality of it, the pain that you feel in a loss with all the things you put into it, like, it's not for everyone. It's not for the faint of heart. Like, that, like, people talk about that all the time. So I had no issue with that whatsoever. Honestly, like, I love Tommy. I think he's a great coach. I think he's a good offensive mind. I think he's working with a lot of things right now, especially when you kind of go the rest of the season with a backup quarterback. Like, that wasn't the guy getting all the reps going into the season. So you're working through some of the things that he does well, what he likes, you know, certain players, how they're kind of fitting in, or, you know, what your strengths are, what your identity is. And that's always the hardest thing about college football is you don't play a preseason, you know, where you can get it some kind of layups and kind of get into a rhythm and kind of
right.
What you do well. You just start playing. Like, they played the number two team in the country on the road. Like, that was your baptism into the season and trying to figure out what you are as a team. And that was tough for anyone.
All right. Last question. College, pro, high school. Have you ever got chewed out like that before? And, like, how'd you take it? Like, if you were 16, maybe you took it differently than you would have taken it if you were 24.
Yeah. Honestly, like, one of the worst tongue lashings I took was my sophomore year. It was in baseball. We ended up winning states that year, Dublin Kaufman. But I went into pitch, and I think I'd come in. I came in in relief in that inning to pitch, and I may have walked the first batter or something. But I got out of the inning. We didn't allow any runs. Like, we were all good. And as soon as I came off the mound, I asked my coach if I was hitting or not, because I think we had used, because the previous pitcher wasn't. We right. had like a DH form, but I usually hit, you know, if I was playing the field, if I was pitching, I was hitting, but I didn't know how that was going to work. Right. Cause you had to make a change in the lineup, and he absolutely chewed me out. Like, absolutely. Like, all the guys back in the day who played on that team, they're older than me, would remember this. You know, the Brock Huntons out there, Aaron Jackson, Travis Thomas, like, all those guys I played with, they all heard one of the worst tongue lashings you'll ever hear. And it was like over spring break. So there were like some parents there, but not really. Right? This is like spring baseball for in the state of Ohio. And I think we're up in Toledo at the time. So I just kind of sit there and take it. And mind you, like, Coach Saunders, I have a ton of respect, love this guy. I'm like looking down at him because he's tiny compared to
him. I was going
to
say, what's his stature there?
So I just kind of take the tongue lashing, don't say anything, and I go sit down on the bench. And guess what happened? Umpire's out there sitting waiting. I was the first one up at bat. So it was like a legitimate question. And so I kind of just sat there and just looked at him. I was just like, what are you going to do? And I think he was like, he then understood exactly why I was asking the question. But in the moment, he like was so frustrated that I wasn't more focused on what just happened on the mound.
Oh, okay. I started to figure out what he was angry about.
Yeah, I think he ended up having me go in and hit, but it was.
I hope he hit a jack. Did you hit a home run?
I didn't hit a home run. I want to say I got walked. So it was like I got on base, which was fine. But I just remember stepping in the batter's box thinking like I just won that battle. I just won that war because it was like a purely legitimate question. But, Charlie Weiss and I got into one of the sidelines a few times in college. I never really had a confrontation with.
Now, would you snap back at Charlie Weiss or you just took it?
East Lansing, Michigan State, my senior year, and things were not going well. Like that was like this like cold, rainy, windy game. And it was so rainy and so sloppy and wet. Like I ended up having to we were having issues with a center quarterback exchange. And we had some words on the sidelines. And that was one of them where I kind of snapped back at him. And then we were fine after that point moving forward. But there were some moments there. I mean, in the NFL, I never really had that sort of relationship with a coach where it was fiery like that. But you know, that it all depends on the personalities, you know, and it's a little harder at the NFL level, but sometimes you'll get it from time to time.
Well, thank you for that insight, Brady, because I love stories like that. I love the fact that your 5'4" baseball coach was just ripping into you.
The best was I don't think he said he'd shove that bat up my ass, but it was like something. There was like literally something close to that, like where it was like pretty threatening, and I was just like, all right. And I kept thinking in my head, like, once I get through this, I'm gonna go sit on the bench and I'm literally gonna stare at while we sit there and watch no one walk up to home plate.
Yeah, I was just perplexed by the response to what seemed like a pretty obvious question. It wasn't like something that would elicit that response, but hey, what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
All right, let's get to the actual rundown. Debo is rewatching Eagles highlights at this point because we're so far afield. Steelers Browns Thursday night. No mystery here that I'm a Steelers fan. I've watched every single throw of Mr. Trubisky's over the last two games, and I'll be honest with you, Brady. It's looked pretty terrible, and I'm not blaming Mr. Trubisky necessarily. I think he's doing what's been asked of him.
Yeah,
you know what you have in Mr. Trubisky. He's athletic, and that's the whole thing about this Matt Canada offense: pre-snap motion, get the quarterback on the move, confuse the defense with what's going on, and none of that seems to be playing out. And in fact, what appears to be happening is that Matt Canada and the Steelers offensive players sort of hinted that they were frustrated by the play calling after the loss Sunday to New England. They're running the same plays like three and four times a game. That feels to be uncommon. Maybe it's not, but like, what is going on with the Steelers offense?
It's uncommon for an offensive coordinator who's been there, right? I mean, this is his second year now calling plays for the Steelers. So that's what's surprising about it. Now, I know Mitchell Trubisky's new, but you've had an entire offseason with him. You know, they signed him back at the beginning of free agency, and he's been in the NFL for a while. So you should feel the ability to do a bunch of different things with him. If you needed to simplify things, it would make sense you're simplifying for Kenny Pickett because he's the rookie and he hasn't done this before. And you know, he obviously got there later than when Mitchell Trubisky even got there. And he's still developing chemistry with all those guys. So that's what's surprising. And look, you're going to laugh when I say this. Like, this to me has more to do with Matt Canada than it does Mitchell Trubisky.
You know? I believe you. That sounds completely obvious to me.
Well, one of the things that like people were criticizing the Steelers for is like the lack of pushing the ball down the field. Like everything felt short. Everything felt like it was almost like a kind of a ball control dink and dunk offense. And I'm like, well, why are you surprised by that? If you're a Steelers fan, you watched it last year. Like you're 31st in net air yards per attempt. Okay.
Is that good?
29th last year.
Here's the difference though.
Give me a second. Cause even when you go back further, like it's been 5 years since they were a top 10 team in net air yards per attempt. So it's not like this offense. And by the way, that was under Randy Fittner. That wasn't even under Matt Canada. So my whole point is like, if you're a Steelers fan, that like you're frustrated about that, like that's been going on now for the past 4 years. And it's probably been a byproduct of their offensive line as much as anything, not the quarterback, not even the system or the play caller. So, you know, I don't know if he's trying to cover up for the fact that they don't feel like they're in a good spot with their offensive line, or maybe he doesn't feel like Mitch can take that much because he's his first year in the system. Only people in that room know. But it is troubling to watch how much talent they have at wide receiver and then not be able to utilize that more in the game plans.
Yeah, and I think part of the concern for fans anyway, and to your point, it's worth noting that we have no idea what they're talking about during the week, the Steelers, when they're planning this. But Steelers fans' frustrations is that, okay, Big Ben was a problem last year because he was 39 years old and ran a 6 second 40 or whatever, and Mr. Trubisky is the exact opposite of that physically, and it still looks to be the exact same.
Which, let me ask, again, speaks to more Matt Canada, right? Like, he's got to adapt the offense to play to his skill set. And I think that's one of the biggest issues you have with play callers. You have guys who just call plays, and then you have guys who are looking at the personnel and saying, hey, what do these guys do well? How do I put them in a position to excel in that? And whether that's the types of throws and drops and things that Trubisky does well, or even like the types of routes that some of these guys run, right? Like, George Pickens stole the show in the preseason training camp. And you got to figure out a way of getting him some more shots, more opportunities, however you go about doing it. I don't care if it's the fact that you shift and you motion him, or you put him in a stack and you disguise different ways of him just running a damn go route. But like, figure out how to do that just to give him an opportunity to get his hands on the football or utilize his frame and his speed. That's why you drafted him. So I think that's the frustrating part, at least for me watching them, is how much talent they have. And then watching a system that just doesn't really play to anyone's skill set. You're just out there like calling plays on a call sheet.
Yeah. To that point, what does it say to you when typically teams offensively are at their best the first few series, because you generally script those plays? The Steelers have scored 2 touchdowns in 8 quarters. And I think you have to go back like 11 games, to find when they scored an opening drive touchdown. I may be wrong on that, but it's been quite a while going into last season. What does that say about the preparation for the 10 to 15 scripted plays when they're consistently not working?
Well, look, the 10 to 15 starters, usually you're practicing those, you're prepared. Sometimes you don't always get the looks that you're looking for. Sometimes you get off script depending on the situation. So it's hard to read into that a ton. I mean, ideally, you should be able to script those and you should be able to roll right down the field and score. But you also don't necessarily know, based on your preparation going into the game, if teams are going to play you the exact way you think they're going to on film. Right? Like, they're going to have some wrinkles. They're going to have some adjustments. They're not going to show you exactly what they did last week and do that this week. Right? I mean, you've got different personnel that they've got to match up with differently. So whether that's, playing more man, playing more zone in various situations, or the blitzes or types of blitzes, all that stuff could vary. So I wouldn't read too much into that. Okay. I think that's just been a byproduct to me, everything starts up front. And they went from a period of time where you look at back in like 2018, they were one of the better offenses in the NFL, and they had one of the better offensive lines in the NFL. Like, look at the same team or another team in that state in Philly. Philly's doing whatever they want right now. And it's because they have maybe the best offensive line in the NFL. That cures a lot of issues that you have, whether it's the quarterback spot or as a play caller. And not saying that Philly has either of those issues, but it helps solve a lot of those issues when you have maulers up front. And I don't know that Pittsburgh has that group anymore.
No, they don't. I think that's fair. The offensive line has been maybe a little better than expected based on the preseason, but perhaps, to your point, that's Matt Canada trying to cover it up with these quick throws. So, knowing all that, and there were chances for Kenny Pickett throughout the game on Sunday at home against the Patriots, does it make sense to throw Kenny Pickett out there? I mean, it feels a little early, but they haven't looked great.
No, they haven't. And I think you have to wonder, if this week doesn't go well. Granted, short week, kind of tough spot for Trubisky to be in, going into 3 games in the season. But you do have a little extra time to allow Kenny Pickett to prepare for their next opponent. And it's early enough where, even if you're a little bit behind the eight ball here, you could still climb your way back. Now, you might be able to say that too in the next, 2 or 3 weeks. But the way I look at it, I think that day is rapidly approaching, and it was anyway, the second they drafted Kenny Pickett. I mean, first round quarterbacks just don't sit anymore. And with the fact that he played at Pitt, we heard the crowd noise too in the preseason, and as good as he played, he didn't give me any indication that he's not ready for that moment, or at least a game plan where he can go in there and execute it. It's just about Mike Tomlin's willingness to put a rookie quarterback in that situation and go and see how things play out. And so Look, I hate that for Mitch Trubisky. He's a really awesome young man. Mm-hmm. I really was hoping this was going to be an opportunity for him to kind of capitalize off this, and whether it's in Pittsburgh or somewhere else, you know, be able to kind of find that franchise spot again. But unfortunately, I think he's got some things that are working against him, and he's probably not going to, you know, if things don't turn around here quick, he's probably not going to get that chance.
I'll be honest. Like, he's played, he's exceeded my expectations. Like, he hasn't done anything wrong. He threw one interception on a little eight route or whatever, against the Patriots, whatever anyway, Tom Brady can throw that pick. Otherwise, I think he's been okay. He's been pretty conservative, and perhaps we'll open it up. One last question about the Steelers. We'll talk about the Browns. I heard Ben Roethlisberger actually say this. He said sometimes on a short week, you would condense the playbook and make things easier. Does that sound about right? Is this an opportunity for the offense to open up, even though ironically they have less time to prepare?
Yeah, I was going to say sometimes, you know, you've got basically one day of install and kind of practice, right? And so it's tough. I mean, that was my first start in the NFL, was on a Thursday night. So there's a certain element of like, hey, keep it simple. We don't need to, you know, practice a bunch of plays. We're not going to end up running. So let's go with the things that we feel confident that we can execute, and let's go with the things that we think are going to work. And then we'll make some adjustments. I think that's the hard thing for the Steelers is, you know, when you look at the fact that they've been having issues offensively, some of that to me is, you know, are they able to make the adjustments in game like they need to in order to be able to find those bigger plays once you kind of settle into what your opponent's doing? I don't know that maybe Matt Canada, Mike Tomlin, or you know, the rest of their staff feels comfortable with some of that, given some of their youth or given the inexperience of Trubisky in this system. So it's hard to tell, but yeah, short week, typically a condensed play or a condensed game plan, and one in which you should feel, you know, confident at least in being able to call things that your quarterback feels familiar with. And then hopefully in game, like, you don't have to make a ton of adjustments and have to deal with that.
So you grew up a Browns fan, right? Yep. 2007 first round pick, of course. Was last weekend one of the most demoralizing losses you can remember?
Yeah. I mean, I was saying the stat earlier, right? It was 2,229 games since a team that was up 13 points under 2 minutes lost. And the last time that happened, I believe, was week 9 of 2000. It was the Cleveland Browns. So you look at stuff like that and you just go, well, yeah, I was a Browns fan. I've seen this before. And I've been there for like crazy stuff happening.
Well, let me ask you this, as someone who has been there, how do you mentally get over that sort of loss? And look, they didn't lose to Patrick Mahomes. They lost to Joe Flacco in his last leg in the Jets team that wasn't very good last year. Mentally, is it something easy to get over? Are you, because you're still having to talk about it? Nick Chubb, for some reason, has to apologize for scoring a touchdown when there are 15 other things as to the reasons right. why they lost.
The defense, can you get a stop on either right. of the drives? I mean, can you recover an onside kick? Can you make a PAT, Cade York? I mean, you could go on down the line of things. Like, yes, that play and him not getting down played a role, but there's a bunch of other things that played a factor in that too. So it was one of the most disappointing losses in some time, because you're thinking like, okay, this team is going to be what, 2-0, you know, out Deshaun Watson and
stacking wins without Deshaun Watson.
And they might be able to make their way through all this. And I think the flip side of it, what's funny about it is you have all these Jets fans who are like, see, we did it. We're this, we're that. And you're going, dude, do you understand? You didn't win that game. Like, the Browns lost that game. There's a big difference between the two. But good luck this week versus the Bengals, because you still have the rest of the AFC North to play through here. You know, you already got pounded by the Baltimore Ravens. You should have gotten beaten by the Browns. They will get beaten by the Bengals. And then who loses that? Oh, Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh's going to have extra time to prepare for you. So there you go. But the Jets fans are excited. They're excited. I think they're jealous of the Giants, who are 2-0 and playing well right now.
Well, the Browns, in the most Browns way possible, help them out. But mentally, what are you thinking if you're on that roster? You had to watch that unfold, that final 92 seconds on a short week.
There's a couple alarming things. Is like, if you're Kevin Stefanski, like, how did that happen? It's not like your first year being head coach there, right? Like, we look at the Broncos and Nathaniel Hackett. You're just like, this is a mess.
Oh, my God. What is going on?
Like, now we've gotten, you know, like today he came out, made statements. I just got George Patton, the general manager, helping with like situational stuff. I'm like,
wait, he said that?
Oh yeah. There's some quotes that,
if you told me that Nathaniel Hackett arrived on Earth 2 weeks ago and he was given that job, I would 100% believe you.
Yeah. I think I'm right there with you. Or in his words, like, definitely believe that.
What is going on? Like, Vic Fangio, I say this all the time. Vic Fangio's like, I got fired for this guy. He's like drinking with his buddies going, this is what happened to me.
But, you know, what you're thinking is, you know, why did no one warn Nick Chubb in the huddle? The staff should have been letting him know.
Right.
Like, hey, get down. You know, first down, get down. Now, granted, the hard thing was I think the line to gain was like at the one. So we've had to get down relatively, you know, shorter soon. But either way, I mean, it was just kind of surprising that, you know, that reportedly wasn't told to him at any point. It should have been. I don't know. I mean, it's you're playing on a short week. So hopefully you can flush it, forget about it, move forward quick. But I think there's got to be a lot of questioning and soul searching for a team that, you know, let a gimme just walk right out the door. And those wins are going to be tough to come by. And especially right. Thursday night, even though you're short week at home, doesn't matter. I mean, it's a much better defense than what you face versus the Jets.
So there's this saying, fog of war, like you're in the middle of a war and things get so crazy that you can't think straight. Have there been instances like that on the sidelines for you or on the field where things are so hectic that something simple like, hey, Nick, make sure you get down, just don't get relayed? Or maybe everything, every moment that Nathaniel Hackett's on the sideline is so hectic that he just can't deal in the moment? Or should there be people that are like, hey, man, this needs to happen?
Well, that's the thing, is there should always be a coach up in the booth who, so in the case of Nathaniel Hackett, and even week one, how that all worked out in Seattle, like they should be talking to him about calling a timeout right away or how they're going to handle that situation. Like there's usually one person who's appointed to doing that. And so, you know, that, and by the way, before that drive, you're usually communicating everything that, how it's going to go, and you've practiced it and you've repped those different situations and scenarios. So, you know, there's usually a coach designated that. It's one thing if you're on the road, like that makes sense if you have a communication error or something, but like Cleveland was at home.
Right.
And so that's what doesn't make any sense as to why they couldn't have just, you know, kind of, you know, put them in quiet and just calm down and make sure, hey, you know, by the way, they got no timeouts, you know, get the first down here and get down. And then the game's over. We don't have to worry about anything.
Nope.
So again, maybe, I don't know, maybe fantasy was somewhere in the back of Nick Chubb's mind. Maybe he's yeah. Eisenberg and, you know, Heath Cummings and Dave Richard, like in the back of his head. And he's just going, oh, I got to help those guys out. You know, someone, one of those guys for CBS's fantasy has me on their team.
He seems like that type of guy too. He seems like a solid dude. Miles Garrett's going to play. Batonio's going to play. Jadeveon Clowney's out. Conklin's going to play. So the offensive line looks to be in pretty good shape. Somehow the Browns are plus +5, which is sort of funny, but maybe not really. I think the over-under is at 38.5 last time I saw.
Already gone up to plus +5. What an over that.
It was plus +5 yesterday. I don't. Maybe it's changed. I'm not sure what it's at now. The last time I saw it.
I'm curious to see what it opened it because I want to say it. I think it opened below that. I want to say like 3.5.
That sounds more reasonable. Plus +5 sounds disrespectful to the Steelers. But how do you think this game goes out? Like how does it unfold? Because Jacoby Brissett has not been bad.
What it do you got? Opened at 3.5,
and now it's up to plus +5.
I guess so. Yeah.
Sunday was 3.5. Debo says yeah. So you guys are right about that.
Man, I mean it is a little disrespectful. Like I think it's an overreaction maybe. And also the other thing is
we'll see.
For a week, home team usually has the advantage. We're kind of early in the season for really feeling some of that I think you get more 3-4 weeks from now. You know, where you're talking about like legitimate, dude, I'm sore. It's going to be tough to be able to get ready for this one by Thursday. Yeah. You know, like I don't know that the players are going through that right now. You know, maybe some, but most of them should be still relatively fresh.
Debo says it's at 4.5 right now. So if you like it, bet it. All right. So you want to, are your Browns going to win this game, you think? Is this this could be the turning point of the season? Because if they lose, I think some people might be in trouble job wise.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see if they want to make a change, only because you'd had to think that, you know, everyone bought into Deshaun Watson, like that decision that, you know, Kevin Stefanski included. So regardless of how the season goes, like he's suspended, he's not even there. Are you really going to fire the head coach that probably had to sign off on this? Knowing that he was going to face a suspension, he wasn't going to be there for a good chunk of the season. Seems unfair to me. I hope Jimmy Haslam doesn't make that decision. And if he does, you know, then maybe someone else will throw a bottle at him for getting rid of a good coach and Kevin Stefanski. You know, it's not like that doesn't happen every week. But
you said that, not me. Here's the Browns schedule if you're watching on YouTube. Steelers at home. Then the Falcons. Is that at? I can't read that far. Falcons, the Chargers, the Patriots.
Atlanta. I mean, that should be a
thank you, Debo. Oh my God, Debo's just trolling me now by making it 400-point font.
Yeah.
At the Falcons, then the Chargers, and the Patriots, then the Ravens. I mean, this is a tough stretch, Brady. So even if they happen to win this game on Thursday night against the Steelers, after that Falcons game, that they absolutely have to win, or everyone's getting fired, I would imagine. then it gets really, really difficult.
I don't think they're on like abort mission if they, you know, they start losing games to the other backup playing. Like I don't see that being the case. Look, Cincinnati's struggling right now. They got to play them before the bye. Baltimore's Baltimore. They're good, but their defense has struggled. You know, they're not finding a pass rush. They gave up a ton of yards, obviously, to Tua and the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Atlanta. I think they can beat Atlanta in Atlanta. The Chargers are going to be a tough one for them. The Patriots don't look great. I mean, they got offensive issues right now. So, all those, I think they're talented enough with their roster to be in there. Their defense has to pick up the level of play. They got to stay healthy. They have to go run the football. You know, that's where Cleveland's at. But I've got Cleveland winning this game. I don't have them covering the 4.5. Even at 3.5, I was like, I think I'm on the side of Pittsburgh here. It's a divisional game on a short week. I think it's going to be really close. I think the most interesting part of this game is the over-under. It's at, 38.5, if I'm not mistaken? That's, or is it lower than that?
At 38.5. And I think our buddy Todd Furman tweeted this out. I saw it somewhere that when the under's around the 38 range, the under is hit 7 straight times, I think, something like that.
So the only problem with that is, and Todd Furman had also tweeted this out, there's been like a historic hit of all these unders the first 2 weeks. And I think books are starting to adjust now where they're getting a little more aggressive with where they're putting that line.
Yeah, that's true.
To beg you to say, all right, like keep taking the under. And if this is how games are going to go, but we're going to put these things so low where like you can't help but bet some overs. So I think this is one where like we could see more scoring than you think. It could be like a 2017 ball game at halftime. And they're like, oh no.
This is
a lot different than what we thought.
That would be a lot different indeed. If I'm the Browns, I'm giving Nick Chubb the ball 50 times. And then you win that game.
Did too, by the way. Mitchell Trubisky is an Ohio boy. All right.
He's a
mentor Ohio boy, Mr. Ohio there. So he's got a kind of a homecoming here.
All right. There you go. They went from one Ohio quarterback, Findlay, Ohio, Ben Roethlisberger, to Mr. Trubisky. That coming. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk about Vikings Lions because old Brady Quinn's going to be calling that game.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives, you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
All right, we're back. Brady, you did fill-in duty for Gus Johnson last week and did wonderfully in the Oklahoma-Nebraska game. Quickly, because Debo's got me on a pitch count here. How did that come about? Because you're on set.
Yeah.
And you had to walk presumably a quarter mile to get up to the booth, right?
Yeah. So our we've got a great crew, and we were on for halftime. And here's the crazy part. So right before we go on set for halftime, my wife texts me. She's like, "Hey, I'm in the ER," which is like the last thing you ever want to get from your wife.
Oh my gosh. Like,
oh gosh, what happened? Is it hers? The kids? What happened?
Right.
She texts me. She's like, "Hey, Tegan, our middle child, she fell. She hit her head. She started to throw up. She's got a concussion. I took her
in.
Her evaluated, CT scan, all that." So I'm like, "Okay, like, how long has this been going on?" She's like, "Probably a couple hours now." I said, "Okay." So I'm like, "Just keep giving me updates. Keep giving me updates." You know, we don't have family down where we live, so we'd like dropped our two other girls off with some friends. Like, and now I'm like texting like friends, making sure like our other two kids are good. So I'm like thinking about all this right before we're ready to go live for halftime. So we get through halftime. And I look down at my phone, like waiting for an update from my wife. And then one of our producers, Bardia, who's awesome, funny dude. He's like, hey, we need to go up to the booth. I'm like, yeah, okay. And I started like taking my ear stuff off. He's like, dude, I'm not kidding. Go up to the booth. Gus is sick. And I was like, okay. And so like one of our other producers looks at me. He's like, we got to go. And so I just start running across the end zone. Like, I run across to like another tunnel. And we're like grabbing a security person. Like, take us up. How do we get to the TV booth? So by the time we get up there and kind of wind through and go up the elevator, Joel had just come back on live. And I'm sitting there, I'm like looking, and I don't know like anything. At this point, I haven't talked to the producers of the truck, the directors, no one. So I don't know if I'm doing play-by-play or analyst or what. So I kind of stand where Gus was standing. I'm kind of getting situated because, you know, they've got a lot of screens. Like, if you haven't been in a broadcast booth, it's kind of distracting because, like, you want to watch the game, but you've got like four screens up around, and there's like stats, and there's what's in, you know, programming, and then there's what's in like other stuff where they show you replays. Or you can have a different view if you want. Then there's like another screen that's going to be showing stats and different communication with someone down the truck. So it's a lot to take in. Mm-hmm. And I've never been in their booth before. So then on top of that, you've got Gus's gigantic, like there's these things we call boards. Yeah. So imagine like a coach's game plan sheet, but like five times that size. And that's all this stuff, right? The players' information, stories, everything else. The problem with Gus's is they're handwritten. And I couldn't read his writing. Oh gosh, this is not good. And so not only are there that, he's got all these post-its with all these like this information about the various players. And you know, when we're down there for a game doing pre, half, and post, you know, we're listening to the broadcast sometimes, but honestly, we're sometimes in a green room watching all the different games because we have to talk about all the different games when we go right. Half. So I'm like looking at the notes thinking, all right, did he say this? Did he not? Should I mention this? Should I not? Like, what should I use? What shouldn't I use? And so all this is going on while I still don't know if I'm doing play-by-play or analyst. I kind of throw the headset on and I hit down in the truck. And I was like, hey, let's just kind of like next breakage and play. I'll kind of talk for a little bit, but let's just get an idea of what we're going to do. So once we got to a break, we kind of talked about it like a game plan. We probably talked for about, I don't know, a few minutes, however many minutes in that quarter. And then Coach Meyer came up. It was a blowout. So it just kind of became like a general conversation.
Yeah.
But that was one of the more like crazy events to be a part of, only because, like, you know, it's so foreign to you, and you like prepare for one job, then you get kind of thrown into another, and you're like, ah, like I almost wish it was a closer game, because, you know, as a game analyst, you know everyone, like, you know the backups, you know all this, right?
Right.
And you've been studying for the stories and everything else, like a mile deep, inch wide. When you do pregame stuff and like the studio shows, you're a mile wide, inch deep. So you know the starters, but you're not going to know like guys are coming in. Well, once right. We got a backup, you got all these blowout, you get all these backups coming in. And so you're like, okay, I just need to find like a little like guide, and we can look up some information on some of these guys. So it was a bit nuts, but definitely one of the crazier broadcasting experiences for me.
No, I saw it coming over Twitter. I was like, oh my God, Bray's pinch hitting. And I'm sure he did awesome because, you know, you're not.
I don't know that I did awesome, but the game came, it went. I don't think we upset too many Nebraska or Oklahoma fans. So I think we were able to hold our own. Joel was a big time pro. I mean, I told him, I was like, I can do play by play if you want. No disrespect to guys who do it, like our guy Chris Hassel, but it's obviously you're watching what's happening, you're saying what's happening, and then you're the analyst. So I was like, I can do that if you want me to.
And in some sense, it might have been easier given that you didn't have the background and all the players.
Correct. Correct. Gotcha. So it probably would have worked out easier. But hey, at the end of the day,
hey, you're pro's pro, Brady.
Yeah, hey, next time, like I literally came away from that saying, okay, this is what I need to do every single time now I travel on the road to prepare. It needs to be an extra set of Joel's boards, like all this stuff that I like came up with a plan. If this ever happens again, like I'll be ready.
But that's the thing, man. And I'm not, you know, blowing smoke up your ass at this point. You actually do prepare. Like a lot of times professional athletes who do media stuff are used to being professional athletes. And I give you credit for being always prepared. So it worked out for you there. But most importantly, your daughter's okay, right?
Yeah, she's fine. She's good. Like me. She's got a big head, thick skull. So she's all right. She seems to be back to her normal self.
I'm glad I waited for you to finish that story because I wanted so badly to make the joke that when you said your wife texted you from the ER, it's like, oh, she was there with Gus. And then I didn't know that your daughter had a concussion. So
No, trust me. Yeah, no, she, it was a long day for everyone involved. So I think she ended up being in the ER for about probably 6 hours before they finally released her. So
well, I'm glad she's okay. Yeah. I'm glad you did a good job. I'm glad it turned out to be a good weekend. All right, let's talk Vikings Lions, because this game, you know, on the schedule perhaps 3 or 4 months ago didn't look that enticing. I've been sort of on the Lions for a while. Like, I'm really high on, I love Dan Campbell. Like, I have no idea. I say it all the time, if he's great at X's and O's, but I feel like he motivates his players to the extent that they will run through a brick wall for him. I think Jared Goff has played, exceeded everyone's expectations since coming over from LA. I said this the other day, I'm around St. Brown at USC did not play like he plays now. And the important takeaway for me is that sometimes kids in college aren't nearly the finished product that you end up seeing in the NFL. And then on the other side, Kevin O'Connell felt like the savior after week one. And then Kirk Cousins said, let's just play a little nationally televised game and rethink that. I have questions about Kirk Cousins still. I think Kevin O'Connell probably is going to be a good coach. Where are you coming down in this game that you'll be in the booth for?
Yeah, so I think you touched on a lot of things there. And so I try to take it kind of like big picture, right? Like, no one's running away at the NFC North. So I think that's one thing that makes this really, really compelling is that you had Minnesota beat Green Bay in week one. I mean, kind of dominate them, really. And so you go, okay. And then you have Green Bay dominate Chicago week two. So they kind of got their win in the division, and now they've got a win. And so they're sitting at 1-1. Obviously, Minnesota, after getting demolished by Philly on Monday Night Football, they're 1-1. And that was one of those performances where, by the way, like, Kirk Cousins gets a lot of flack for the Monday Night Football starts and, you know, his level of play, which clearly two of the three interceptions were on him. The third one wasn't. And And I always say, at that point in a game where you're down, like, you got to take chances. I mean, you're going to probably throw more than one. I mean, if you're doing it right, you got to take chances. You got to give yourself an opportunity. But there is something to be said for the fact that he never seemed comfortable in that game. The offensive line gave up some pressure at times. They never got really a running game established. They never got Justin Jefferson the ball. And credit Darius Slay, he was phenomenal in that game. I thought he could have gotten away with like a PI early on that first. I believe it was a third down. They tried to target Jefferson. Looked like he was holding his arm maybe a little early, but that kind of set the tone. And then after that, that was like the rest was history. But, you know, that being said, like, I kind of think about Minnesota and I wonder, all right, like, which one are we going to get? Like, what we saw one versus Green Bay or what we saw on Monday Night Football on the road? For Detroit, like, their Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde is more of the fact, like, their offense has been phenomenal, right? Like, they're putting up a ton of points. You mentioned Amon-Ra St. Brown. Now, I will say this. I'll differ with you in the sense that, like, I loved Amon-Ra coming out. Now, the only thing I didn't like about him was the fact that he played at Southern Cal. Outside of that, I loved that young
man. Well, good for you. Yeah.
Reminds me of Steve Smith. Like, that was my comp for him.
That's a great one.
And he just the way – I mean, he is like the pit bull of the family. When you talk to his dad, John Brown, and your, you know, Equanimous St. Brown, like, when you get the different personalities – that's the pit bull. Like, that's the one that he's not the size or the Adonis effect of his dad or his brother.
Right. But
he's got a lot of crap to him, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Great route runner, strong hands, attacks the football with his hands. He's the kind of kid that, like, you could tell they were going to try to, like, Sam Darnold got the football to as much as possible. I loved him. I thought he was a value play, and it's awesome to see him excelling now and having that chemistry with Jared Goff. I think the last 8 games, you know, what he's done is been only up there with like the Antonio Browns of the world and a few others. And Jared Goff, for that matter, his last one, here's the stat I've got. His last 8 starts, he's 17 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, and he's got a 4-3-1 record as a quarterback there in Detroit. That's saying something. I mean, he's playing a lot. Really, really good football. So, and look, then DeAndre Swift had a great game last week and he was playing on a bum ankle. Like, you would have never thought that. He caught a ball that got tipped. And I don't know if you saw this highlight.
Yes.
Hit the line of scrimmage. He kind of caught, like, as he was falling, gets up. That was on 3rd and 15. Like, it wasn't just like an incredible play. It's like that kind of completely changed the dynamic of the game. Like, Detroit was up 7 at that time. Washington had come back. They dominated at that point in time in the second half. And it was like that singular play, like, literally broke back open Detroit winning that game and beating Washington. So, my thing with them is, like, their Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde is more of like, where's the defense at? Because we saw the defense first half, pitch a shutout, Aiden Hutchinson has 3 sacks. Like, they're all over Carson Wentz. And then second half, you give up all those points and yards and everything else. And you're going, okay, wait, what happened here? Like, tale of two halves. So I think it's going to be really fascinating to see how these two teams match up. I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what the plan is for a guy like Justin Jefferson. I don't know if they feel like Jeff Okuda is similar to Darius Slay, where he can match up with Jefferson in those situations. You know, there's some health, you know, things there too. Some guys didn't practice on the injury report that we'll see if they go. But, you know, all in all, look, it's a 1 o'clock start Eastern time. And, you know, Kirk Cousins typically plays usually better football at that time, in that time slot. So,
or as I call him, Andy Dalton 2.0. I will say this. It feels like last year the Lions are losing that game against Washington because, to your point, the defense sort of collapses after they get up to a huge lead. This year felt different because they've been able to overcome the little dips in the way the defense has played and had answers to the DeAndre Swift point you made. So I think that's encouraging.
You know, Ben Johnson's done a tremendous job calling plays. I think you can see last year he kind of took over the play calling towards the end of the year. He's done an unbelievable job. You know, and one of the things I love that he does, and we talk about this sometimes in the show, he creates formations and he does things with the shifts and motions to give Jared Goff answers. Like, I just think Jared Goff is the type of quarterback, and McVay said this about him early in his career with the Rams. Like, he's the guy that you want to, you know, kind of catch and shotgun, get the ball out quick, right? Like let him kind of spit the ball out, or deep, and then, you know, deep play action fake, bombs downfield. And you're seeing a lot of that, you know, and you're seeing a lot of like the three by O sets. You got three receivers on one side, one tight end the other. And that's going to give you a man zone indication. And if you can get some of those answers before the snap of the football, you know, you know your matchup, you know what leverage you have, you know where to go, what routes are probably going to win, right? NFL is all about leverage. And you typically don't look at guys who they're going to have to go against someone's leverage, because it's really hard, unless they're a stud, to beat, you know, a guy on an inside breaking route if he has inside leverage. So Ben Johnson does all those things, the way he schemes. And like, there's small things that I love that they do. Like, they are so quick to the line of scrimmage out of their huddle. Like, I know it sounds stupid, like peewee football, but like, you look at Denver, for example, like their operations, they get out of the huddle, they're slow walking up, like a methodical approach. You got 3 seconds on the play clock, delay a game again. Like, that's not happening in Detroit. Like, these dudes are fast to the ball, they get set, they're shifting their all that. It's a snappy operation. Like, that's, to me, like a small thing, but it's a thing that stands out about like Dan Campbell and where he's building this team. So, like, to your earlier point, like about guys playing for him, like, I think they buy in and I think they love him. And I love that about this team. So I'm excited. Like, I get to talk to him. I'm talking to them tomorrow, and I get to talk to the Vikings on Friday before the game. So I can't wait. I really can't wait for this one.
Well, I'll be looking forward to your call, because you always do a good job. All right. One last thing before we go. You mentioned that we've talked, sort of skirted around the Broncos. One last question. And so there was a clip going around of Russ Wilson on the sidelines last week in Denver, their first home game. They almost lost somehow. Of him imploring the practice squad players on the sidelines to yell pass or run to help out the defense. I thought that's something that typically happened. I don't know, like high school, maybe college. I'm not sure. So at first I was like, okay, people just hate Russ, cause he's weird about certain things. What's your take on, is that something that typically happens on an NFL sideline? Number one, and number two, should a quarterback be asking practice squad players to do that?
Well, the first part is no, it doesn't. It's not typical to happen on an NFL sideline, because, you know, you don't need it to. I mean, one, if you're at home, and the crowd should be loud enough where they're not hearing you. All right, you can yell whatever you want. Like, they're screaming their heads off, especially a mile high or whatever the hell they call it now. But the other thing is if you're a defender out there, you're reading your key.
Right.
Like, that person on the field is going to know if it's run or pass from their key faster than the sideline's going to identify it. So the run or pass call really doesn't help. Now, a call that would typically be helpful is if you're the sideline and you're like yelling ball, meaning like the ball's in the air and it's pointed towards that defender. So that you'll hear from time to time where the, you know, a ball's thrown on the sideline, cornerback's, you know, got his back turned, ball, ball, ball. And then like, he's going to, you kind of hear that and get ready, or he'll throw his hand in between the receiver's hands to try to disrupt the pass and then turn to identify.
Right.
But, you know, again, like that can't happen unless the DB's in phase. And what in phase means is you need to be like at the hip of that receiver if you're going to turn your head to start identify or look for the ball, because the second you turn your head, your body goes with it. And so that you're naturally going to create separation from that receiver moving away from you, right? And that's the last thing you want to do, is start to look for the ball and then have the ball drop right over you. You can't make a play on it. So a ball call is more common. I personally have never heard a runner pass since like peewee or high school football, maybe. I'm not sure what's behind it, honestly. Like, their offensive operations are so bad.
Yeah.
That's the last thing I'd be concerned with. I'd be talking to my line They've been having issues with some of that stuff. I'd be talking to my wide receivers and everyone. I mean, there's so many other things I'd be focused on other than a runner pass call on a sideline. So it's a little bit confusing what's going on there.
Yeah, my thing was always he'll punt no matter what, but that's just me. I'm a little different that way. All right, where is Big Noon Kickoff this weekend, Brady?
Big Noon Kickoff is in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The Michigan Wolverines taking on undefeated Maryland, by the way. Another basketball school, 3-0. You know,
Talia's the quarterback, right?
Talia Tagovailoa, yeah.
He played pretty well last year. The few times I saw the next game after I Dude. Thought he was doing well, I threw like five interceptions.
Check out their wide receivers. Rakeem Jarrett, Jayshon Jones, Copeland, Dante Demas. Like, all those dudes are NFL caliber. Like, they're studs. I'm telling you, Michigan's played one of the worst schedules we've ever seen, like, historically. I mean, Colorado State, Hawaii, and UConn have two wins combined between the three of them. They beat their opponents by over 150 points combined. I mean, look, that's what they should do if they're that bad.
Right.
Like, Colorado State hasn't scored more than 19 points in any one game this year. And so they've played an awful schedule. This will actually test their secondary. The defense for Maryland's not great, but
yeah.
We'll see if the losses that they faced, you know, with Aiden Hutchinson and Ajabo and Daxon Hill, if those guys like come into play this week. But we're in Ann Arbor for that one. And then I fly out after halftime. I'll be headed to Minneapolis for Detroit and Minnesota.
Oh, it's too bad it's not in Detroit. You could just drive down the street. All right.
I know, right? That would be nice. But here's the cool thing. I haven't been to a new stadium. So I'm actually pretty psyched about getting to the new stadium up there in Minneapolis.
There you go. All right, so check Brady out on Saturday. Check him out on Sunday. Brady, it was great seeing you and talking to you, and hopefully we can chit-chat again soon.
Always a pleasure, man. Yeah, I hope we get to do this again.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.